Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Oh, good morning, Tam Tam.
Guess what I had to do today?
What did you have to do today?
I did a drive-through, not Burger Stop, but a drive-through COVID test.
Oh my God, how was it? Did you get the swab in your nose?
No, I've done that before, but it was a spit test and I had to do my daughter as well. And okay. This is the funniest thing. I have to explain like what happens, right?
Okay.
So you go online and you book your time. And mine was like 11:30 and there's like 3,000 appointments per place per day. So that's how many people are getting tested. And so we show up at 11:30 and there's hundreds of cars and you have to wait in line to go and get scanned. Your barcode has to get scanned.
Mm-hmm.
And then you go through the first stop and this guy comes out with one of those little clappers, like, you know, those like things that what do you call them?
Clipboards? Like a clipboard?
No. Like something that I used to say, like a picker upper, like something.
Oh, like a poop scooper thing, but it's like just got the little, it's like a crab hand.
It's a crab hand. So they come to your car and I'm like, I'm in the future. They come and they put it like, you roll down your window and then they put that little crabby hand thing into your car and then you have to sit and do it within a minute. And I just got so freaked out I wasn't doing it correctly. So they had to pull my car aside.
Oh no.
Ma'am, you're taking too long and you're holding up traffic.
You're like, what? I'm just trying to be good. You're just trying to do your deed.
Trying to get a test.
Yeah.
But it was pretty easy and it was free. And you know what? Now that I know, I'm going to get COVID tested every single day.
Just go every single day. You're like, you're standing 9 a.m. appointment.
Yeah. I'll be like, I think I have a cough. I think I'm headache. Oh, I think I need to go to the bathroom too much.
Oh, okay, it's a shame they don't have this for pregnancy. Pregnancy tests, like every morning at 9 o'clock, go in and get it done. I don't think I am today. No.
Well, now that we've introduced our day, maybe our guests can introduce how they have been in quarantine and how they've been feeling about all this. So who do we have today, Roxy Saki?
Well, I am just so excited because I feel like it's a little bit of a Pretty Little Liars reunion today. Right? We've got Tori DeVito on, who is just like a lovely, lovely person. I can't wait to talk to you.
Yeah, she's not just an actress, Rox. She's a philanthropist.
Yes,
she's a
producer. Is.
She's a musician who plays a badass violin, by the way. And I feel like I'm nothing when I like learned about her whole history.
Yes.
I was like, what have I been doing with my life? But welcome, Tori.
Yes, welcome.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
Oh, yay.
How has quarantine been for you?
It has been the wildest ride of my life.
Oh my gosh.
Truly.
Yeah.
It's crazy because, you know, there's been so many different waves of it, you know,
mm-hmm.
And I actually, I started a relationship a little bit before quarantine and then we decided to quarantine together. So we
went, oh my gosh.
Yeah, yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
So okay.
That was really fun. And we're still together, which I think really speaks volumes. Because we even said like 1 month is like 2 years. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
It was a crash course and amazing. So there was that. And then also now I'm in this phase where it's like, I cannot get motivated for the life of me.
I know.
It's killing me. If somebody would have told me I had this much time, I would have felt like I would have done all these things. And sometimes like, I just want to sit in front of the TV or I can't get myself off the couch or I'm like, I want to write, I want to do something. I should go for a walk. And then I just sit staring at the wall. And then I call my mom. I'm like, why am I so doing this?
Give yourself grace, you know, because we feel so guilty about all the things that we should. It's like that word should be doing. And then what happens is we feel so much anxiety when we don't, because we also feel like we've failed. But no one knows how to navigate this. Like no one, we haven't ever been in this situation, not in our lifetime. Mm-mm. So you know, Roxy and I have kids, so it's like, we almost think that your side might be easier, but then I also think maybe not, because we're so distracted all the time. I mean, what do you think, Rock?
I mean, I think, it definitely goes through my head too. I always wonder about the other side, because I'm like, you know, I have friends who are actually single and like are not with anyone, and they have quarantined alone, like 100% alone. And so that like, I think that would be tricky, but I sort of feel like you're in the ideal position, Tori, because you got this like new relationship. It's like a new guy, right?
You're
like,
in those days,
right?
I think we quarantined ourselves on purpose back in the day.
I think so, but you got it. Like, it's almost like you're in the honeymoon phase, like permanently at this point. You know, it's like you guys are kind of still, you know, feeling each other out, like probably literally too. Yes,
right.
Literally. Exactly. So I kind of think it might be like kind of nice to like imagine what quarantine like that could be, because I mean Tamna and I, like she was saying, we've got little young kids and we're homeschooling, and it's like something new every time. It is so like what has been sort of your quarantine trajectory? Are you guys like, how has this like really worked for your relationship?
Well, it's interesting because we said like everything you learn over the course of like maybe 5 years about someone, we learned about each other. It was like a crash course. It's like I made a joke to my friends. I was like, it's not like, you know, if somebody says, oh, I met this guy and I really like him. It's like, yeah, but do you really like him? But now it's like, no, but do you like quarantine like him?
Right.
Yes. So it's, you know, it's been really cool because we just learned so much so quickly about each other. And I feel like to still be together really speaks volumes about the connection. And now, you know, I'm actually back at work, which has been crazy too. Because after a week, we didn't even finish the first episode before getting shut down for 2 weeks. So it's like this whole new way of working, which is crazy, like with all the protocols and like, you know, it just takes so much longer now. And like, even like I walk out of my trailer and if you forget your mask, everybody's like, and you're like running back to your room. You're like, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. So it's just like this whole new, it's whole new thing. So we went from like meeting and falling in love and being together every day to now like I'm in Chicago and, you know, then being long distance. And I'm like, it's just one extreme to the next, you know, it's crazy.
I've learned so much about you recently because I've wanted to have you on this show for so long. I've always been in such awe about all the philanthropy that you do, and we'll talk about that later. But something that I found out is I had no idea that, first of all, you were born in Long Island and raised in Florida. Is that right?
Yes, I lived in New York till I was 11.
Okay. Mm. And your dad was Billy Joel's drummer, which I just found out. And he, like, so we didn't start the fire. Like, I don't know the exact words, but I feel like that's my jam.
Yes.
And then when you were about to come out into the world, Billy Joel pretty much announced on stage that you were being born. Is this correct? Because if this is correct, this is the crazy story. Like, that's a lot to live up to.
You know what's crazy about that? I had one of my co-stars, Nick Gelfis, he's a musician, and he came into set one day and he was like, it was crazy. I was actually like YouTubing your dad and like watching his work last night. And I saw this one video in Wembley Stadium in London. They like announced your birth on stage and your dad had like happy birthday tour written on the drums because he wasn't able to be there for my birth. And I was like, yeah, you know what? I know that story, but I have the DVD. I've never watched it. Isn't that weird? I've never seen it. I don't know why. I don't know why. Maybe because it is so much up to actors. I'm like, I don't know. but yeah, no, that's the true story.
Wow. And I mean, going back to Billy Joel, this is such an incredible connection. But you spent every Thanksgiving with Billy Joel and his family, and you grew up
sung we right? fire every Thanksgiving.
I know, right? And you grew up with Alexa Ray Joel as kind of like a sister to you almost, right? So
yeah, we're very close.
Yeah, what were those memories like being in that family, in that house, and all that good stuff?
You know, it was a lot of fun because Alexa's mom, Christy, Brinkley, she's like one of the most, and my mom too, the two of them are like the most imaginative moms. Like one of them where I know I want kids, but I'm freaking terrified because my mom would like hand make all my costumes and just like, do you know what I mean? Oh, and same with Christy, when we go to the house, the costumes that like me and Alexa would play in, and there was like ponies on the property, and we were just, you know what I mean? Like, and I was like thinking to myself, like, can I figure that out for a kid?
No, and you don't.
I can't even hand-stitch a skirt. I'm like,
no.
Like, how do you make a poodle skirt?
No, you don't. You buy them from Amazon for $9.95.
Yeah, right? Exactly. They're lucky they get dressed in the morning.
So they have underwear on. I'm like, woohoo.
Yeah. Yes. It was really fun. One of my, a big memory that just stuck with me is I'll never forget, Alexa grew up vegetarian. Mm-hmm. And I'm vegetarian now, but I wasn't when I was a kid. And I remember getting in a lot of trouble because during Thanksgiving dinner one year, I was like trying to really get her to eat the turkey. I was like, just try it. Just try it. And I remember getting in so much trouble. She didn't try it, thank God.
That's not nice.
I know, right?
I didn't understand. I was like, don't you just want to try it?
I don't, but knowing you. So you are an incredible violin player. And I mean incredible. You played on, we were going to call out second daughter Stevie, and you played on Stevie Nicks's because I love her so much on her album. Did your love of music come from watching your dad?
Sort of. So on one of the Billy tours, there was a violinist that was on tour with them the whole time. It was the only tour that there was a violinist. And I was just like enamored with her. I was 6 years old and I just like followed her everywhere. And then at the end of the tour, I asked my parents if I could play. And my dad's first question was like, is she going to go deaf? Because my dad's pretty much deaf from playing the drums. And the girl's like, no. And so they let me play. And yeah, and that was that.
And, you know, the violin is a very tricky instrument for those who may not know how to play it, right? What was it about the violin that made you gravitate towards that versus like the piano or like the guitar? Because it's not the most common instrument to pick up.
It's not, I don't know. I just think I just loved the sound when I was little. Violin and cello, like even cello over violin sometimes. I love that like deep sound. It's so beautiful. Mm-hmm. And just watching somebody play it, I was just so attracted to. It's such a gorgeous instrument, but it is frustrating. It's hard. I mean, there were so many times, my mom will talk about all the time, the tears through practice. You know what I mean? Just the frustration and the tears, because it is, it's hard. You know, and now it's hard because, you know, it got, acting, the best advice my dad ever gave me was to try not to be a jack of all trades, but pick something and try to be great at it. Because my dad like lives, eats, and breathes the drums. And I like dabbling in everything. Mm-hmm. And I think he saw that when I was like starting acting and like still playing violin and stuff. And he was like, just try to be great at something. And so, but now that the violin's kind of taken the back burner, when I go to play it now, it's like that frustration from a kid comes up because I feel like I'm like maybe on par with myself when I was 16 now. And I'm like, and when people are like, just play something, pick up and play something. I'm like, you don't understand. It's not that way with a class violin.
Yeah.
I've worked on piece.
Yeah. I said that about literally everything I do. I'm like, I haven't cooked in 2 months, okay? I don't know how to do that. I haven't made a bed in 3 months, okay? I'm not very good at it. I don't know what to do.
I know. Some people do that, though, every day. They get up, they make the bed, they cook the breakfast.
Who are these people, Roxy?
People that are not us.
You fell in love with acting. So you started around, you were 15 years old when you started to like fall in love with acting, which is around the same time that I think I got my first job.
Yeah.
And I remember, 15, I got my first job in Australia and I was like my first audition. So I was like, oh, this is going to be easy. So many years of therapy and so much money I've spent on going, wait a second, my work gives me my self-worth. And then when I don't work, like, what do I have left? So when you're so ingrained to think that, you know, success only means through your work, then it's hard when you grow up and realize that it's not always like that, especially in our creative fields. But no, 15 years old was when I started. And I remember from such a little girl, I just wanted to perform. Like I came out of the womb, like being like, by the way, guys, that's Billy Joel. If you don't know
exactly what I'm singing. Didn't pick it up.
Yeah. So, okay. So when did you know that you wanted to be an actor or perform is why I'm telling you my story.
I have to say, just bouncing off of what you said about like the self-worth thing, it's so interesting because I feel like that quarantine has brought that up a lot because we haven't been able to work. And especially too, in like meeting someone and starting a relationship and it's not like, oh, I'm busy, I have to go to this event, or I'm busy, I'm like filming here. It's like, no, this is just me. There's no glitter, makeup, nothing to hide behind. And then it almost becomes that question. It's like, oh my God, like, am I offering enough? Am I enough just to show up? Like, it is a total mind trip. Mm-hmm. That's been a really cool learning experience. But when I played violin, I was playing out and playing professionally. So I liked performing in that way. I think I always knew I wanted to act. I just didn't know it because when I was 7 and I saw Les Mis, I wanted to be Eponine more than anything on this planet. And I would like do all the scenes and like die and make my dad be Marius. And I was like, blah, just loving it. but I can't sing for anything. So it was like when she'd go high, I actually have a video where my veins are sticking out of my neck and I like hit the note and I go, not do it. I think I just like loved performing my whole life. And my sisters were always a big audience for me. And then when I was 15, I got put into modeling and I didn't love it. And the photographer was telling my mom, like, you know, she's really shy in front of the camera. You should put her in an acting class. And so then when I did that, I was like, oh, this is what I want to do. This is what I like. So that kind of really took over at that point.
So like when you were 15, so you kind of started acting when you were a teenager. Do you remember what your first acting gig was that you got your SAG card?
Yes. Okay. So it was kind of a combination because you have to do a certain amount of like, or at least it was back then, you have to do a certain amount of hours or something or a certain amount of jobs. So I got a Busch Gardens commercial, a Sonic Burger commercial. And then there was this show because the WB used to, before it was the CW, dating ourselves, when it was the WB, they had this show that filmed in Jacksonville called Safe Harbor. I don't think it stayed on for more than a season. I had one line and I remember I was like, walking down the school and the lead kid like drops his glasses and he's kind of supposed to be nerdy. And I step on them on accident and then it like panned up my leg and I said, oh, sorry, buddy. And then I just kept walking. I was like, I made
like,
it.
I'm a star. That's a chance.
Forever and ever.
I remember saying goodbye to my best friend after high school when I was getting like packed up my Explorer Sport to drive to California. And I was like, don't worry. I'm going to go out. I'll set up my car. I'll be back in a year. It's going to take me a year. And then I got there and it was like,
you're like, I won't forget the little people.
I remember when I got my husband. My husband was my husband's film was the first film I got in the States. It was like this little horror indie film. And I remember when they called and it was Gersh called and they were like, you got the job. I remember laying on my bed going, Tamin Vincent Valentine, you finally made it. And I was like, this is going to be my starring role. And I remember I'd be on set and I would say that I'm a more advanced actor now, but like back then I would like starve myself all day because I'd really want to feel the pain of being like slotted. And I'd drink caffeine. I don't drink caffeine anymore because my anxiety can't take it, but I would drink like 4 shots of espresso because I wanted to shake. And and then I'd be like, oh, don't kill me, weird Martian. That role was it, and I met my husband, so at least something good came out of it. But I was like, that's hilarious.
Method acting.
I love that when you're young, like that, you're like, I'll do anything, don't pay me, just I'll kill myself for this. I love it. I'm like sobbing all day, I'm ripping my guts out, and now I'm like, well, okay, so what is the contract? Like, how many hours is this job?
Yeah. how much of the side of my boo do I have to show?
Yeah. Tell me like, exactly. Yeah,
which one is it going to show? Because my right's always been better than my left.
The right's the star.
Yeah. The right's always been the star, by the way. And both my kids think so, too.
Hilarious. I love it.
So tell me. So my husband and I also talk about the fact that, like, you know, being creative is, it's like such a blessing. And we're both creative. And your new boyfriend, maybe fiance, maybe husband, maybe baby daddy. Ooh. We don't know. I just went from zero to like 500 right there. So we're just quarantining together.
I'm used to it.
We just don't want to kill each other in quarantine because you don't have babies. That's how it happens. You have babies in quarantine.
Oh, yep. Yep.
But happens. The creative life, we always say, is like such a blessing and a curse. And it's like, I don't know. I feel like this business has broken my heart more than anything else ever has. Yeah. And I don't know if you feel the same way. Like, I feel like I want to give up. And then just as I'm about to give up, you get either a job or the opportunity to get a job, or you get the feedback from someone you admire that says that you're incredible. And then it's just, it almost just strings you mm-hmm. enough along to keep going. And maybe that's the universe or God or whatever pushing you in the right direction. Yeah. But how do you feel about being in this creative field?
It's so hard. I always laugh when, you know, my dad will call me and be like, oh, so-and-so's daughter's getting into acting. Would you mind talking to her and giving her some tip? I'm like, why does everyone think that somebody who's actually made a living as an actor has like some magic code?
Yeah.
If you jump through this hula hoop and turn around twice, you'll be able, it's like, no, I don't know what to tell you. You got to submit, you got to audition, and you have to be the one that sacrifices best friend's weddings, best friend's birthday parties, family dinners, family holidays. You know what I mean? Like, and there's a difference between the people that are willing to give that up and the ones that, you know, aren't, you know what I mean? And there's neither is good or bad. It's just, if you want to have a career in this. And so I feel like in that way too, it's broken me more than anything. Cause I've always had to, you know, miss out on things or, you know, but it's just, it's hard. It's really hard. I always felt like every audition I do, the only ones I booked are the ones that I would call my mom crying and be like, I'm never acting.
Pretty Little Liars. Yes, that was it for me.
You got the job. Yes. Yeah. It's like, why? And then I leave, whenever I leave being like, oh my God, I killed it. Always. I like call for feedback and they're like, no. I'm like,
yeah, we just didn't see it today.
Right, right. Yeah. I would love to understand what that is. What that is. Why, when I think I crush it, everybody else is like, ooh. It's like, what is that?
I mean, Pretty Little Liars was the worst audition I've ever done. Like,
was it?
It's not
the,
funny.
I even said in the room, and I said this to Roxy, I even said, hey guys, this is the worst audition I've ever done. And then I walked out, and then I gave up acting, and then they cast me, and then I had to re-audition because I didn't know if I could actually talk because I didn't talk in the pilot.
Like, there's something about that girl.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something about her. She's so funny.
Yeah. We love her.
That's right. So Pretty Little Liars. I mean, it fascinates me so much. We had your guys' castmates on. Like, everyone has like a very different experience. And it's always like so interesting to hear all the stories. But like, when you were on the show, Tori, like, what was that experience like for you? Like, because there's got to be, you know, good and bad and like everything in between, you know, what was it like for you being a Pretty Little Liars?
Yeah.
And we're not on the show.
You know, it's so funny because, well, first of all, I went to that audition telling my manager, like, I don't want to go. And he was like, why not? And I was like, well, I just like One Tree Hill kind of started my career. And then I did Vampire Diaries. And I was like, I kind of want to do more like adult stuff. I think when I did Pretty Little Liars, it was 10 years ago, I was like 26 or something, 25. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm ready to be a full grown adult. And he was like, just go. And so I went and I ended up getting it. And my agents were like, I'm serious. I think this is going to be a thing. I think you should do it. And I was like, but my first show was on ABC Family. Do I really want to do that again? And thank God I did. I'm so grateful I did. But, but it was such an interesting experience. I mean, I mostly worked with Troyan, whom I absolutely adore. She's the best. And I felt so grateful that I got to go because we would have the best conversations and I just adore her. During the pilot, somehow Ian Harding and I just went like this. And to this day, he's literally one of my best friends. I mean, I got him I didn't get him the job on Chicago Med, but I put his name definitely in the mix, and then his audition did the rest. But like, I just, every time I have a girls' night, the joke is like, it's girls' night plus Ian, because he's part of like my friend group now. He always says he has an honorary vagina, which I love so much.
I bet he does.
And I'm so grateful for that friendship, but he and I actually never worked together. So when he came to do Chicago Med, he said they just gave him the script on the plane and he had to come in. His wife died of an aneurysm. She's pregnant. I have to take the baby out and do a C-section while she's not alive anymore. And then his baby has to go up to the NICU. So he has to be sobbing. And then he realized, he's like, I realized too, you and I have never actually worked together. And you know, it's always odd to like work with a friend that you've never. So not only that, but on day one was the day he had to come in when his wife dies and all that happens. So it's a new job working with a new friend. He's like, there was a part of me that was cursing your name on the plane.
And he has to show you a side of himself too, that like he doesn't normally show you. So that can be a little, and you know, when you have to get really intense, like emotional, you want to really check out. For me, I don't want to be best friends with the person, especially if our friendship is based in a lot of laughter and fun. You know those friends that you're like, every time I look at you, I start laughing.
Yes.
I'm like, you, Roxy, I would never.
Yeah, exactly. I know. You don't want to be in tears with me.
But there are other people that you've been through so much with that you can like touch them and it's like, oh, it all comes. So I can see that.
Yes. You know, so I was like trying not to look at him on set. I was so nervous for him. I was just like reading my book and he'd say something. I was like, like I didn't. I was like, "Don't look at me! Don't look at me!" But you know, the experience was really fun. For some reason, I'm not that much older than a lot of the cast at all. But for then, I always felt like kind of like a little bit older. So I always felt not out of loop, but I always felt like I'd come in, do my thing, and then just kind of back. Like I was like, in the click. But
I mean,
it was
I think a lot of us.
Like I said, I got to work with twins, so I loved it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of us have, we've spoken to obviously Ian and Keegan and Janelle and Lindsay, and there has been that, you know, sometimes I think when the show's about four main characters, and you might feel this way too on your show, Chicago Med, like they have sort of a repartee that's, you know, between them. So when you're only doing like 50 episodes, like we were, instead of 150, you kind of missed out on some of the joke, you know?
So it's like you come in
and you do your job. But it was, what was hard for me is like, I've always been like wanting to be loved. Like that's my issue. So it's very hard to like be on a show where people find you as so much of a part of it. Like the fans are like, they really see you as a whole, but you don't necessarily feel that because everyone obviously has spent so much more time together.
Totally.
So I was like the whole time, I was like, please love me. Please love me. But I'm not sure.
I love it. I'm not sure.
Yeah, so you know, it's such an interesting thing. I mean, because you guys have been there, you know, it's been years. Like, I think it ran for almost 10 years.
Mm-hmm. It did, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, were there any times just like, you know, because I mean, it's natural that people, you know, you're close with people. Sometimes you fight, you know, sometimes you have your ups and downs. Did you have like any particular like challenging experiences with people on set? And like,
how did who were their names?
Tell us everything.
I don't think I had any like challenging. I remember bumping into some people on that set, like that I didn't think were the nicest.
Okay.
And so I just kind of like would like be like, whatever. You know what I mean? But I also like feel like sometimes that's a bit of a product of being on a popular teen show. Mm-hmm. And I do feel a little grateful that the times that I was on those teen shows, I was older already.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I've seen that happen a lot. You know what I mean? Cause those teen shows grow rapidly, like overnight, you know, and you really have to have like a lot of stability, really good, mature head on shoulders, not let it get to you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I kind of noticed that here and there were some people, you know, part of the job sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think sometimes, you know, I think you and I have, because we are older, how many times have you finished a show and you've thought, oh my gosh, like my life is going to change. I'm going to be on the next Scandal. And then the phone doesn't ring for 6 months or you audition and you don't get anything. And it's like, I feel like you have to lose before you start to like really develop that sense of gratitude and grace. And, yes. you know, I feel like you can't have that if you're always winning. Mm-hmm. I think that those losses really define us, of who we are as artists and people. And you grow from that. You grow from the painful stuff. You grow from the dark stuff. You grow from Absolutely. This, like things like this pandemic when we don't have the answers and you lose your control. And so that's what I think what happens is when you're on a show that's so successful so fast and it's your first one, you haven't really had that fall yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that fall builds so much character. Do you know mm-hmm. what I mean? It makes just toughens you up and it just mm-hmm. adds another layer to you that I think is really important. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when the show ended, what was it like for you? Like immediately after, was it like,
you got another show?
I know. She's like, I was working the whole time.
Well, it's funny because I was actually already on Chicago Med and I remember they called to see if I could do the finale. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh shoot, I'm already in Chicago Med. Like, you know, yeah. But I went to my producer and I was like, you know, it's only one day. Mm-hmm. I'd actually really love to finish this out. And he was like, hey, that show is a lot of the reason, you know, why your career is what it is. Of course, mm-hmm. we'll schedule around it. And there was like no question asked. They just let me go in the middle of a episode and then come back. So that was really special. I was glad I got to finish that out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, you always say, I always feel like in times of crisis, you find the helpers. And I really want to talk about your philanthropy and how you are a big advocate for mental health. And I feel like you've always been one of those people. You've always been one of those people to stick your hand up and say, you know, I'm going to help. And I don't know if it's, you know, and Roxy, you can answer this too. I don't know if it's because when you have kids, it's like you want that so much, but you're so fucking exhausted and you're so time poor as well. Like there's just not enough yeah. hours in the day to give back as much as you want.
Yeah.
I know that I kick myself because I want to do more, but who instilled that in you? And, mm-hmm. and yeah.
Oh God. I don't know. It's funny that you say that and hearing that perspective, because I think, you know, I'm definitely at a point in my life where, you know, kids are kind of that next step for me. Mm-hmm. And I've even thought to myself, like the same thing you're saying, like, you know, once this Chicago Med is done, they don't really do TV like this anymore. And, mm-hmm. you know, who knows when my next job will be after that, because the industry's changed so much. And I'm like, but I think I'd want to take some time to just mm-hmm. be a mom for a little bit. And then it's like kind of scary too, because you're like, okay, but then do you just forego all that? Like, I think, you know, J.K. Rowling wrote all the Harry Potters when she was a mom. So like, mm-hmm. what does that look like? So I don't know how you guys do that. That's amazing. Cause I feel like without it, just with having like three dogs and a boyfriend, I get like highly distracted. like, oh, like I was supposed to do a million things. And I didn't somehow, you know what I mean? I'm like, oh, cooking for myself is so hard. but no, it's you know, I think I get like a lot of my work ethic comes from both of my parents, but my dad, like mm-hmm. he always, I mean, my dad just wrote a book, which is actually really phenomenal. And it just came kind of out of nowhere. He's never written anything. And, you know, he's always had his like goal set on what he wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that like, for me with the philanthropy stuff, when I was like 25, when I was on One Tree Hill, actually, so mm-hmm. I was like 24, I remember being like, I love this business and I love acting. But no, I love acting, but I don't know if I love the business. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know, that show had a bit of that too, where it was like, everybody was a little catty. It felt mm-hmm. a little dark. And I was mm-hmm. like, ooh, like I was going home at night, like at the hotel, like feeling like very anxious. And I was like, ooh, mm-hmm. I don't know if this is for me. And so I was like, well, I should like devote my time somewhere else. Mm-hmm. So that's when I found hospice and started like volunteering with hospice, and then like took that, you know, to where it is today. But I think that it taught me two things. Like one, you definitely have to have a distraction outside of this business, because mm-hmm. if this is the only thing in your eye, you're just mm-hmm. gonna like sink. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because we're also having to be so self-focused, mm-hmm. you know, in this business. So it takes us out of our heads, thank God, mm-hmm. and onto something else or onto someone else. And then like my goal for my career changed, because it became like, I want to keep building a platform and building this career so that I can bring awareness to the things that I'm really passionate about. So that kind of stepped up my game of like wanting to continue in this business. that's where it's at. So those were the two kind of like driving forces that kind of kept me going.
So with everything going on in the world, because I feel like, you know, we turn on the TV and there's a new news story every day. There's, you know, things that are just inexplicable about what's happening now. And, does that motivate you, or does it more kind of to do the change and to be the change, or does it kind of paralyze you and make you feel a little helpless and not really know what to do?
You know, it's so funny because for me, like when it comes to the work I want to do, obviously, like I want to have it for whatever it is that I'm doing, like reach as many people as possible. But for me, it's always been more about like the one-on-one connections. So like with this organization, Safe Bay, that I work with and I'm on the board of directors of, they teach like sexual, like assault awareness and like consent to kids, and getting to go to high schools and just talking to 10 kids at a time personally and telling them my experiences and allowing them to open up. That to me is like, if I could just get to one person, that's fine. So I don't really have like a global mindset. For me, it's more like just day by day. If I talk to one person and I show them a really cool vegan alternative leather jacket, and it gets them to buy that the next time, then like that feels like a win to me. Like I don't really, for me, it's not so much global. The news is so massively overwhelming. I really don't watch it anymore. I stay aware because there's like a certain group of girlfriends that I have that are so smart, like so much smarter than me. And I keep them on group text because they always are talking about what's going on in the world, and they are my source of news. Like I trust them implicitly, and I'm like, great, you guys do work for me. But I feel like that's another thing that's been interesting in the quarantine too, because it's like whenever I'm having a down day and I'm like feeling like woe is me, it's so easy to go into that, well, I have a job to go back to, you know, I'm healthy, my family's healthy, like people are literally dying, people are suffering, people are losing their jobs, like, you know, going insane. And then you immediately feel guilty that you're having an emotion about your own life, which doesn't make sense because you have to let yourself have
it. It's all valid.
It's all valid, but it's hard not to be like, I can't believe I'm crying over, because I didn't write today. I'm like so sad. You know what I mean? And it's like people are suffering.
But I always think that everyone's pain is valid, and you can't say to someone like, I have one, you know, I only have one broken leg and you have two, so your pain is worse than mine. Because everyone has to live the life that they were given, and everyone suffers in certain, like, yes, there are so many people that have worse off than other people, but maybe they handle it better. And maybe those people who don't have as much on their plate can't get through their day. So it's like, we have to be really careful too. I think that the biggest issue, and because one of my, my mentors and leaders is like Brené Brown, and she talks a lot about shame and like the shame spiral and the shame cycle that we're all in consistently and constantly. And it's about shaming other people sometimes because like we feel bad about ourselves, but then it's also shaming other people is really about shaming ourselves and how we really feel deep down. So it's like, you know, my husband and I sometimes fight and I cry about it. And instead of saying, you know, you're such a weak little child, which like, you know, could probably be in my head, I'm like, you know what? I feel frustrated. I feel overwhelmed. Like he's annoying the shit out of me. I love him. I'm sure I'm annoying him, and it's okay to cry. As long as I don't make it, as long as I don't blame and put my stuff onto him, you know?
Absolutely.
But you've been working with like hospice, the hospice, what's the foundation you work for since 2011?
Yeah. So I do hospice volunteering with the hospice that used to be in California. Now I work with the hospice in Chicago because that's where I am more. But the mothership of hospice is called the NHPCO, the National Hospice and Palliative Care Organization. And they kind of oversee most hospice in the US. And I do like stuff with them, like spokesperson stuff with them. Somebody brought it to my attention. They're like, have you ever reached out to them? Because I'm sure they've never had a spokesperson. When I got in touch with them, they were like, no, we've never had a
amazing. And what is witnessing people? Because I think it's, you know, Roxy and I have such a severe fear of death that I always thought that you doing that is such a brave thing. But then I always wondered, what does witnessing someone die in their last moments of life, what does that teach you about living?
You know, it's really interesting because, like I said, when I got into the hospice stuff, I was really like depressed, and everybody was like, don't you think this is gonna make it worse? And it took a lot of convincing to show people like it actually lit me up, because when you are sitting with somebody who is in their last days or their last months, it's like all they talk about is who they loved, who they didn't love enough, where they traveled, and basically that's it. Like, I've never heard somebody bring up their job. You know what I mean? I've never heard somebody. And so it kind of puts that in perspective, and it just makes you want to live each day to your fullest capacity of love. You know what I mean? Giving and sharing love, whether it's to strangers or the people you love personally. And so that's kind of like a really good reminder. You know what I mean? And to me, like, it's just like, kind of like watching birth, you know what I mean? They're going to the next place, wherever that is. I don't know, but like, you know, the next thing. So it's kind of like a beautiful circle.
There can be beauty in death, for sure.
For sure. Because people are transitioning over, and like you're saying, you know, I can only imagine what people on their deathbeds are saying, because, you know, we put so much emphasis on career success, our jobs, you know, reaching that next sort of milestone, instead of really being present and taking the time with the people that we love, you know, and working on those relationships more. So has that changed you, seeing people on their deathbed like that? Has that changed the way that you view your relationships and that you kind of view career progression?
Yeah, it kind of showed me that, you know, if there's an argument going on, like, you know, some people on like the Italian side of my family are really cutting people out. And it's kind of taught me that, like, especially with family, nothing should ever get too big to where you don't talk to somebody again. Do you know what I mean? And it's kind of put that in perspective for me. And it's also made me pickier and choosier about like who I really want to invest time in. And you know what I mean? Like, I used to stay in relationships, that friendships really, that were really kind of dark and like, would give me so much anxiety. And then you just realize like, you can send that person love in a different way. You don't have to show up and be with them every day if they're like draining you like that. So kind of put in perspective, like, you really want to make sure you're like giving your time in the best way, and, you know, just really valuing your family and friends and the ones that you love, you know, daily, truly.
Jay Shetty, who's also someone I love, he said, you know, and this is, I just think we focus so much on things and trying to impress people, you know? And so he said this amazing quote. He said, "I'm not who I am. I'm not who you think I am. I'm who I think you think I am." And that just was like, holy crap. It's not about me. It's not about you. It's what I think you think. And so we buy all these things, we spend all this money, we waste all this time to impress people that we think are thinking a certain thing about us. They probably don't even have time to even, for us to even cross their minds, you know? And so I think being around that and watching death, I don't know why. I think my anxiety, I think, has come from, I think I've always had anxiety about perfectionism, but my anxiety really is about not being able to control things. And we live in a world and our lives where we just can't control anything. Not really. We think we can to a certain extent, but death to me is the ultimate let go of control. So I think that that is where my anxiety stems from, is from that. And I know you've talked about mental health and anxiety in your life. Do you know where yours comes from?
I don't. I think there were some, you know, I had an amazing childhood, but there were, you know, certain aspects of it where, you know, my dad, you know, being the, you know, rock star that he was, there were certain aspects of it that I think I felt like I didn't have control over. I think it's funny you say control, because I feel like that's where a lot of my like anxiety or OCD stuff comes in, is like that lack of control. Maybe I felt a little bit as a kid, and my parents did the most phenomenal job ever as parents, and they did the best that they could, as well as every parent does. But I think there was a little bit of that, feeling a little out of control at certain points. Like, I had no control over certain things, and I think that's where it kind of started. And then I think it just grew. And it's, I only know that after 10 years of therapy, though.
Of course.
That's a lot of money we've spent on therapy, yeah. By the way. You and I could probably bought a house together.
Seriously. A vacation home in Bali.
Exactly. Right? I was like, mental health or this vacation home? I'm sure this vacation home would have made me feel a lot better.
But it is so important that you did get therapy and that you sought out help. But was it hard for you to realize that you needed help and then to take that step and find help?
You know, I think it's like the Gemini in me. I've always loved like learning new things and like, ooh, what does this mean? Like, let's investigate it. I want to like learn. Like, oh, sure, I'll crack myself open. What do you want to know? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I think that I was a little more, but I have a lot of friends where it's like that first step into therapy. It's like, I don't know. You know what I mean? So I think it depends per person. But my therapist actually does EMDR therapy, which is so cool because it really helps you like go back, like way back. Yeah. And I love therapy.
Yeah. Can you give us their number?
I need some help.
I know, right?
I'll text you guys after.
Yeah, for sure. So EMDR, just so people, if they don't know what that is, what type of therapy is that?
Mm-hmm. So it is, let me look it up because I always mess up the acronyms. Mm-hmm. It's eye movement, rapid desensitization.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Or something?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Okay.
I don't know. So anyways, but what it basically does is when I first started with her, it was like a light and you follow your eyes with the light. It's becoming more popular now. A lot of therapists are actually getting certified in it. Or they're like little buzzing things in your hand. And basically what it does, you kind of go into this like meditated state. And before you do that, she'll have you identify like, okay, Tamin, when you ask your husband to do the dishes and he doesn't, and you get so mad and then he says, I'm sorry, and he doesn't, but you're still mad. Okay, mm-hmm. That means it's old because him apologizing and doing it should be enough for it to
No, it's not. It's not enough. It is not enough. So I've been fighting all morning about, I think we fought, what did we fight about today? We both said, I need an hour, and I said, no, I need 2 hours. And he's like, but you, like, and that's what we fought about. And I can't get over it.
That's valuable time. So she'll be like, where is the feeling? Is it here? Like when it arises, where is that feeling? So then you identify, you're like, it's in my chest. So then you like watch the light or whatever, whichever form it is. And it basically puts you in the light. What it does is it helps you activate both left and right hemisphere of your brain. Mm-hmm. And so she just asks you to keep looking at the light until you start remembering when the first time you ever felt that feeling was. And it's normally around the age of like 7, because that's when you like really determine what love and what the world means to you is when you're 7. And so you're able to go back, and then it's like a whole process where they walk you back and like you kind of figure out how to reparent yourself in that moment. And then it's like, instead of like talk therapy where you almost open the wound and you talk about it and then you kind of like go on your way, it really kind of like sews it up. So like the trigger will still be there, but you can look at it the next time it comes up and go like, oh, okay, cool. And you keep walking. So they made it, they first created that form of therapy for soldiers who used to come back with PTSD. So it's for PTSD, which I was like, well, I don't have PTSD. She's like, well, you do. And I was like, but I've never seen a dead body like on the ground. She's like, no, people could have PTSD from their parents getting divorced. You know what I mean? It comes in all levels. So it's really interesting.
You know, I realized that, you know, I have bad PTSD from a health scare. And what's so crazy about it is when that health scare happened, I looked down at my fingers and I started to go blind. It was like a mimicked a stroke or whatever. This is a long time ago. Wow. And so now I can like, if I look at my fingers the wrong way, I'm like I'm back there again. It's almost like I can make myself like lose my vision. It's crazy. Wow. And like all those symptoms start to come back because like there's such a trauma that hasn't been healed, and I can still smell the same smell. I can still hear the sound when it happened. And it's like, until you fix that, you consistently be having those symptoms and experiences until you really look at it, like you said, in a third party way, and go, okay, I'm going to put this over here and heal myself.
Yeah, totally.
So where are you on your like mental health journey today? Because you know, it's different every day.
Mm-hmm. It's different every day. Like, you know, I really thought I had a lot of things handled. Mm-hmm. I do struggle with like some OCD stuff that I need to bump into. And it's so funny because I feel like, you know, my friends will be like, I have OCD too. I love cleaning my house. And I'm like, well, that's not OCD, but that's okay. OCD is like obsessive thoughts about like one specific thing. So, or it comes in different things, but for me, that's what it is. I have like a weird thing with like corners and like a camp, like weird thing with bathtubs. It's so weird. Anyway, it's not, I don't mean weird, but for me, it's like, it's hard to describe. Anyway, so there's things like that, that I still, you know, have a hard time with that send me like shivers down my spine. Sometimes I'll be like standing somewhere and I'll get this like jolt and my boyfriend will be like, what was that? And I'm like, I just envisioned my hand touching that crack and it sent a shot down my back. He's like, what? He's like, you should go talk to somebody.
Yeah, you're like, I am. It's been 10 years. Yeah, I could have had my holiday home. I got it.
Right? I know. So there's little things like that that I'm definitely still working with. But as far as anxiety goes, I really, you know, I'm a huge advocate of, you know, spiritual work and meditation and all that kind of stuff. And it's really helped me. I know for a lot of people that I love, you know, sometimes they'll get on a pill and that'll really help them. This just happens to be my path. And I thought I had it all under control until the quarantine hit. And my anxiety has been like right back where it started. Yeah. Like even today, I had to go pick something up and I was just driving my car and I just like my breath got heavy and I was like, just started crying for no reason. And I was talking to my boyfriend and I was like, I'm just like having so much anxiety right now. He's like, why? What happened? I'm like, I don't know. I just feel overwhelmed. And then it's hard because there's really nothing. I mean,
well, there's everything to be overwhelmed about.
It's like, oh my God. And it just becomes like all encompassing. And so it's just about going back to those tricks, like okay, breathing, you know what I mean? Yeah. And even during this quarantine, it's been so crazy because it's like, I feel like my spiritual practice every day, I meditate twice a day and I work with my energy healer and I pull my cards and I have like my altars and this and that. I don't think I have like meditated maybe 5 times during this quarantine. Mm-hmm. I just can't find the strength. I'm like, who am I? What am I doing?
Yeah.
Well, it's just like Groundhog Day, you know, every day it's like there's no end in sight. So it does get overwhelming like that. There's no break, you know?
And then it's silly, like going back to work. And I'm like, I think I worked out 3 times this quarantine and I cannot working out at home. Get.
Oh, I cannot. I'm like at 3 sizes.
It's the worst.
Yes.
I just have to accept that this is.
You can't get motivated. Yeah, you can't get motivated.
No, you can't. And and having scrubs feel too tight on you is like, what is that? Stop.
So we'll ask you a few more questions and then we'll let you go.
Yes.
But what's the next plan for you? Like how, you know, Chicago Med, by the way, I auditioned for. And I was like, yeah. And I was on a set of something else. And I was like, felt like shit that day too. And it was against the wall. And it was on my iPhone. And then you got it. And I couldn't be mad. Like I couldn't be mad because like I really like you. So yes. I was like, I'm really mad that I can't be mad. Because we're kind of the same type, I think, a little bit. So we've probably gone for the same roles. And I just was like, you know what? At least it went to someone who's...
I know. Isn't that so funny how that happens?
But I'm sure Chicago Med is so hard. Like in Chicago, it's so cold, you know? So like it mustn't be the easiest conditions. But like, what's next? Like what's going on for you? What are your goals and dreams and what's happening?
My experience on this show has really changed so much because I felt like, oh, I got to do more. I got to do this. And then I think with the world kind of flipping upside down, I've so appreciated the stability of this job that it's kind of changed my mind where I'm like, I'll stay as long as they ask me to stay now. You know what I mean? And I love the show. It's one of the best shows I've ever worked on. I love the cast. I really love Chicago. So next for me, I have like gotten into producing some stuff, which I love. Mm-hmm. For me, I've realized my happiness really stems from just being like able to creatively express myself, even if it's not for anybody else. You know, like I've been into this writing class and I've noticed that, you know, I kind of like want to focus right now on, you know, potentially growing my own family and like, and mm-hmm. stuff like that, that, you know, when you're acting and, you know, certain relationships don't work and stuff, it's easy for that time to slip by, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I'm in a place right now where that's kind of standing in the forefront and the career is kind of like in mm-hmm. the, a little bit in the back. So I don't know what that looks like for me, you know what I mean? But I'm never going to step away completely. Obviously I love mm-hmm. working so much, but yeah. So it's kind of like just a day by day thing for me, you know?
So it kind of sounds like kids might be sooner rather than later. Could be coming.
Corona baby.
If they do, I would love it. Whenever they're ready to come in, come on in.
Do you see yourself having like multiple kids, or has it always been like a one thing, or what, how do you feel about that?
I definitely would love to have at least two. I mean, look, I grew up, I have three sisters and mm-hmm. I can't imagine not having siblings. I just can't. And, so I don't know, but who knows, at this age in my life, at this stage, maybe it will just be one, you know. I've always thought about adopting two, so maybe that'll come into play. I have mm-hmm. no idea, you know, cause also when you're single and in this business too, I've had that plan. I was like, okay, my plan B is a really great plan. If I don't meet someone, I will adopt on my own. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I was like, I'm not going to miss out on this, you know, being a mom and all that kind of stuff. So I don't know. I don't know what all that looks like.
Mm-hmm. You know, you were married before. And so is that something that you're wanting again? Or was that not a good experience? You're like, I'm done. Like, we don't need to do that again.
Yeah.
You know, having a wedding, I mean, you might be done. Yeah, I'd be over. No, but I would love to. I would love to have a family and be married and all that stuff. I it's so funny. I always say, I always joke, like, I didn't get divorced because I didn't like being married. I just, mm-hmm. and my ex and I are actually really good friends now, but I just married the wrong person for that mm-hmm. lifetime. Do you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I would love to be married and, you know, build all that, but we'll see.
So is like, you know, because a lot of people say after they come out of divorce and everything, they say, you know, it could have been the right person if it was a different time, you know, a different point in their life. But for you, do you feel like it was just the wrong person, wrong time all around? Or is
it's so interesting, because if mm-hmm. I say this, it's going to sound like, because there's no, like, I think everything happened the way it was supposed to happen. But do I think if we were older, things mm-hmm. would have been different? Sure. I met him when I was 22. We were engaged mm-hmm. by the time I was like 22 and a mm-hmm. half. You know what I mean? Like everything was just, and I was crazy and he was crazy. It was just like these wild, like, you know, young kids flapping around pretending like we knew what we were doing. So it was never gonna, that was never gonna, you know, work.
Mm-hmm. But although I met my husband at 22. Can you believe it?
Did you?
Oh my God. 22.
That's when we have fights, I'm like, you took my childhood. I can't go anywhere now because I'm like in my mid-30s. You're going to take me now. And I didn't even know how to swipe left to swipe right. I don't even know what I'm going to do.
See, you missed out.
Like, don't leave me, because I'm like, I don't think I'm going to get
any. Don't leave me.
Oh, yeah. But that's really sexy, isn't it? Don't leave me. I won't find anyone else. I always get so stressed about like, oh God, like I don't want to, you always seem to find the sexiest, hottest, greatest people. I don't think I'd have the same luck.
I'm sure you would.
No, I really don't. I think I'd be single for the rest of my life. At least I've got kids, so I guess it's okay.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Okay, so would never have I ever and let you go.
Yes.
Hey, Rox, you go.
Okay. Oh, just want to let our viewers know to listen to Tori's Never Ever Hour. Go to the audio. So go to iTunes, Amazon Music, wherever you get your podcasts, and download it, because you are not going to want to miss it. All right.
Played this game since I was a kid. Let's go.
I love it. Okay. Never have I ever. Ooh. Never have I ever secretly liked a makeout scene on set.
You know what?
Come on. Mm-hmm.
Truly?
Come on.
I'll tell you why that's never. I'll tell you why. I get skeeved out by smells, and I hate, nothing turns me off more than kissing a guy when I can smell makeup on his face. So whether I thought he was hot or not, it was always like an ick for me.
Uh-huh. Yeah. So. Well, the worst is like, they've put so much mint in their mouth and it just hides the stinky stuff with the AIDS. It's like, why eat the salad? Because they all go to the salad bar because they want to stay obviously looking good for the sexy scene. So they're eating like the salad and the cucumbers and the onions and the whatever. And then they've got all the mint in their mouth. So it just smells like, it just tastes like minty onion.
Actually, it was so funny because Ian Harding, when he came on the show, he said that he purposely would eat like garlic and onion chips and then kiss Lucy on set just to mess with her. Totally.
Okay. Never have I ever made my boyfriend sleep in his car or outside or like told him to leave.
Oh, I've definitely told boyfriends to leave before. Sleep in the car though. I mean, I've had people sleep on the couch. That's ridiculous. Yeah, but
that's
like in the car. I'm actually like taking that now as an idea for the next time I get mad.
Sleep in the car. Yes, in a Chicago winter.
Yeah, teach him.
I always go like, get out of the house, and then they leave, and I'm like, why did you leave? They're like, you told me to. I'm like, have you not understood women don't mean what they say?
I know, exactly. It's like, you know, I'm leaving. This has been a really bad fight. I'm just going to go for a walk. And if they're like, okay, I'm like, no, you're supposed to tell me not to.
Yes, exactly. Why don't guys get this? They're supposed to say, I love you so much.
Right.
Do that. You're breaking my heart.
Yes.
Every woman does the same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Never have I ever drank too much and forgot that I made out with somebody.
Yeah. Oh, I ever.
It's like the next morning. You're like, did I? Oh yeah. Oops. Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Like, I once lost a tampon.
Where did you lose it?
I don't know, but I hadn't had sex. Hopefully. I hadn't had sex and I was 17 and I had the tampon in the beginning of the night. The next morning it was gone. I'm sure it came out. Bathroom, I'm sure, because my brother was with me, so I'm sure nothing bad happened. Because this is like a road to like a story that wasn't meant to come out or happen. But so, and then I went to the doctor, and they still to this day have not found the tampon.
Could still be in there.
That is a terrifying thing. That is a terrifying experience that every girl dreads, because you're like, is it somewhere I can't find in me, or did I do something ridiculous with it? Yeah, he's about to find it.
That's or like you and I who have anxiety, we think, am I going to get toxic shock syndrome because it went up some weird pathway of the hole that like
the question is who did you wake up next to? Do you remember?
My brother.
Oh, you did. Hold on.
My mom. That is a different episode, Roxy.
Yes. That's a totally different episode.
Okay, Roxy.
Okay. Never have I ever. Ooh, these are so like kissy, Tammin. Never have I ever kissed a PLL guy offset.
Ooh.
Oh, no, I was with my ex-husband during that.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I'm sure they flirted with you. No one flirted with me. Not one.
No, the only person I ever thought maybe flirted with me was Julian Morris, but then I realized he just makes everyone feel like they're the center the universe when you're talking to him, and I was like, oh, I'm not special at all. That's who he is. He just talks to everyone like that.
You're like, he really likes me. Okay. Right, we'll do two more and let you go.
And her. Okay.
Okay. Never have I ever stolen something.
Ooh. What did you steal, girl? Tell us.
It's so horrible. When I was about 14 years old, I would steal my parents' car before I even had my permit. And I would drive to the mall, and I went through a little like week of like, I did a little bit of shoplifting for me and my friends.
What was like the craziest thing you stole?
I stole a Tommy Hilfiger jacket once.
Oh my girl, goodness. You are
making up for all that karma.
I know. And then I was stealing a pair of Birkenstocks, and this guy in the store caught me, and he took the bag and he opened it and he took them out and shook his head, and I ran. Me and my best friend ran. And to this day, I've never even like stolen a penny. And I don't even know where it came from. It was just one of those like stupid teenage things where it's like, what was I doing? Like, how did I think that was okay? Yeah. But Uh-huh. It was a face. It was a embarrassing face.
Yes, a little naughty. Got to have your rebellion, you know?
Yes, yes.
Okay, Roxy okay, Soxy, last one. Make it good. Make it
okay.
good.
Okay, let me preface this by saying when Keegan came on the show, he told us that the last scene that he filmed with Ian, they went to a bar before they were, or a restaurant before they filmed, and they got totally plowed for like the last scene they filmed together ever. They were super emotional the whole bit. So my question to you is, never have I ever gotten tipsy on set and then filmed.
God, I wish I could say ever. I never.
It freaks me out.
Really?
It freaks me out too. Yeah. Because I already like, I don't drink that much anymore. Cause I get so insecure the next day. My anxiety, if I drink too much, is like on fleek. And I'm like, I cannot do that. So if I was doing it at work, I'd be so in my head. Mm-mm. But I wish I could be that casual. Just like, yeah.
Right. Just like have a few, come back.
Yeah. Like, I do three it like more during the last, like if you're on a movie set and you don't have anything to say and like
right.
you're like scenes after lunch and it's the last day. I've done that before. But yeah. No, I don't drink as much either because the next day I think you lose so many of your B12s, by the way. Your B12, yeah. B6 and B3. So you need to take that after drinking.
Oh,
so that helps you drink more. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, great. Now I'm going to be plastered all the time.
Yeah, I know. On your B vitamins.
Okay. What is your drink of choice? Like when you go for it, what's your drink?
I love wine. Mm-hmm. I love a good glass of wine. Mm-hmm. I love vodka soda. If I'm out at a bar, mm-hmm. I'll do that. And then if like, I'll do like a big girls night, maybe once every 6 months. And that's when like the shots of tequila will come out.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
I like the shots of tequila.
Tamin, we got to work you up to that. We got to get you in the shots.
Oh, I used to do that all the time, Roxy. The problem is I now have children. I have a 1-year-old. So like I wake up, but it ain't fun. It ain't fun having shots of tequila the next day, like like changing diapers. Like that is not fun for anyone.
No.
If I was with my husband or like even on a girl's trip away from my children.
Yeah.
Then I'd be okay.
You'd be like game on.
That'd be way too
stripper color, yeah, totally. No one wants to see this stripper.
I know. Hot mom stripper on pull number one.
Don't you think that's a good calling card? Mom strippers. I'm sure no one would go.
I don't know. People are into some weird shit.
They are. But in general, mom strippers is not as good.
They are.
Calling card for sure. For us. Right. Well, thank you so much, Tori. Thank you for joining
our craziness. Shit show.
I mean, kidding. Yeah. We learned so much about you. I've always adored you. Don't be a stranger.
For sure, you too.
Hopefully. Oh, I'm doing a massive road trip. Maybe I'll come past Chicago. We can.
Oh my God. That'd be amazing.
We leave in a week's time and we're driving across America.
Good for you. That's going to be so incredible. Oh, good. I can't wait to see the pictures.
It'll be so fun. Well, right. Thank you so much, Roxy Soxy. Thanks. Have a good rest of your day, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
We are Women on Top Official on Instagram.
And we are Women on Top Podcast on Facebook.
Don't forget to rate, subscribe, and comment. And I am Tamin Sirsak.
And I am Roxy Manning.
And we are
Women
on
Top.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.